Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Tuesday, January the 5th, and I will be joined tonight by my good friend George Rodriguez from South Texas. You know, we want to talk a great deal tonight about Texas 2021-2022 and talk about what lies ahead, some interesting times for Texas politics, and also touch on our Senator Cruz on Wednesday proposing an accounting or some kind of a review of the election results in a few states. And that is going to be a big day tomorrow at the U.S. Senate. But we're going to begin, though. Let me say hello to our friend George Rodriguez. George, how's the weather in San Antonio these days?
It's been cool and dry, but tonight we're supposed to get some rain, which we're very happy for. Tomorrow's supposed to be a little damp and cool, but it hasn't been too bad. I mean, we haven't had we did last on the 31st. We had some very, very cold weather, and we had all that snow to the north, directly to the west of us.
Mm-hmm.
But we're doing good. It's not bad.
Yeah, well, we cannot complain. We cannot complain. Although, I just checked the weather forecast here when you mentioned rain, because I had heard that rain was coming our way, and maybe this is some of your rain coming up by 35, George. But we've got rain forecast from 3 a.m. to pretty much all morning tomorrow. So we'll be getting some of that rain tomorrow. So, but other than that, it's been actually beautiful, absolutely beautiful, beautiful weather. How was your new year? Did you do anything exciting?
No, not really. I got together with the family early on, and then came home and relaxed. Started to go to bed early, but unfortunately, my dog is afraid of fireworks, so that kept me up till around 12:30, and then finally everything just quieted down and we fell asleep. But it was good. It was not fateful. It was fun. It was quiet.
Were there many fireworks in San Antonio?
Well, yeah. Unfortunately, this is one of the byproducts of the whole defund the police effort. Is there have been some real, real strong efforts by community leaders over in the both the Black and the Hispanic community to leave people alone. And let them enjoy the evening. That's what they say. The other issue to it is that the district attorney, which is like the one in Dallas County, our district attorney won because he was funded. His election was literally funded by George Soros, and he has decriminalized all sorts of things. So the police did very, very little to get involved in stopping or arresting anyone for fireworks. There was an arrest for some people. There were some arrests for some people shooting live ammunition into the air, if you can imagine.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But outside of that, unfortunately, we did have a lot of fireworks, not in my area necessarily, but in other parts of the of the city. There was, I mean, it was incredible. There was a video that was taken from the Tower of the Americas that showed just all sorts of fireworks going on at midnight in the south and west part of the city. It was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember too many fireworks over here, frankly, but it was kind of an unusual, as you can imagine, unusual December 31st without the what normally happens on December 31st, where people go out and obviously enjoy themselves a great deal.
Sometimes
well, we want to talk tonight about that's right. But I will tell you, and we'll get around to talking about this on another show. But this defunding the police is really hurting the minority communities, and
it really is,
because they're the ones who get screwed. They're the ones who are being attacked, and the police is not there to protect them, and it's an unbelievably bad situation. We do have to talk a little bit about, before we get to Texas and Senator Cruz, we do have to briefly touch on what's happening in Georgia, where at the moment, with 81% of the vote, Perdue has literally a two-point lead, 51-49. It's 51.1 now, so he seems to be growing that lead. But right now, Perdue has roughly, let's see, 40, almost an 80,000, I'm going to guess 80 or 90,000 lead on Ossoff. And then on the other side, Loeffler has about a 50, 60,000 lead. Again, this is with 82% of the vote. So, again, these are not final results. You're not going to call this for a while. But it does look to me, if I had to bet you a cup of coffee, George, that I'm going to bet you a cup of coffee that Perdue wins for sure. And I'll go out and say that Loeffler wins too. I think that we go 2-for-2 tonight. And I got to hand it to President Trump for going down there last night and really putting it on the line. And lots of other people who were down there saying, hey, you may be angry with the governor, you may be angry with the Secretary of State, but we got to get these two people reelected because we got to look at the big picture. So that's kind of my summary of it. Again, it's not final, but I'm really liking Perdue's position right now, George, and I really like Loeffler. And again, I'm talking with 82% of the vote now. Perdue has a 50. He's got more than a 2-point lead, and she has about a 1.4 lead. So I like their chances, George.
Yeah, they. I mean, it looks like they definitely are increasing their lead. Early on, it was really, really touch and go. I mean, I watched it as the lead changed three times in the short time that I had been watching it. But it does look. I agree with you. I think Perdue is going to win. I think he's got a lead that's insurmountable at this point with 82%. Of the vote in Kelly Loeffler, I'm hoping I'm gonna reserve my comment on that. The thing that worries me is that the last that I heard, and this was about an hour ago, so it's probably changed by now, I'm sure. But about an hour ago, they said that only 35% of Fulton County of the votes had been reported. And Fulton County, of course, is Atlanta, which is heavily, heavily Democrat. So, you know, how much that will influence in the count in the next few in the next little while, I'm not sure. Now, as you and I were talking before the show, the turnout for Republicans has been very, very good. There has been some worry about the amount of Democrats that have turned out. Apparently, the Democrats didn't turn out and haven't been turning out in the great numbers that a lot of them thought. There is again a lot of suspicion because there was a huge number of absentee ballots apparently that came in that were favorable to the Democrats. So that raised some questions,
right.
That raised some eyebrows on it. But the actual number of people that have gone to the polls apparently has been a little disappointing for the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, you know, I think that Perdue is going to win, and I agree with you, and I certainly hope that Loeffler holds on and wins too.
Yeah, well, we're gonna go on to our other topic. We'll come back to it in the second segment, and we'll take another look at it. But right now, just one last word about this. With 82% of the vote in, 82%, Purdue has a lead of 86,000 votes.
Yeah.
51 point, it's almost 52-48, right? No, 51, well, yeah. And then Loeffler, 51-40. So I like Purdue's chances, but, you know, that last 18%, the longest yard, as they sometimes say in professional football. Let's talk a little bit about Texas, because this is a big year for Texas. These next 2 years, we're going to have a governor's election in 2022. I don't know, refresh my memory, but can a governor run for re-election 3 times in Texas? I thought that they were limited to 2 terms.
Yeah, I think it's only 2 terms. No, I think it's...
Okay, so that means that Abbott will not be running then, or cannot run for re-election then. But I think when I, you know, you and I did several shows about all of this since, you know, 2018 was you know, at the time we didn't know whether 2018 was an aberration or the future. And 2020, I think in my mind, George, really, I'm not saying that it canceled 2018 completely, because there's no question that the Democrats have, you know, are stronger in now than they were 10 years ago, let's say. But when you look at John Cornyn's victory of over 10 points, when you look at not a single Republican congressperson was defeated for reelection, when you look at Chip Roy down in South Texas, how he defeated a heavily funded Democrat, it seems to me that the Republicans are actually were able to really sort of get back on track after 2018. And maybe it's because they took the Democrats more seriously, George. Maybe that's why. Or maybe just because the state, you know, because 2018 was an aberration. I like the Republican chances. And then on top of that, you're going to have 3 new districts, George, in the House of Representatives, 3 new federal districts that I believe will probably make life more miserable for some of these Democrats in competitive districts. Who are probably going to see they're going to be running in different districts in 2022, George. So I like our chances, or I really like the Republican picture in 21-22. What is your sense of the Republicans 21-22, George?
Well, you know, it's very 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 interesting, because the postmortem after the election, the Democrats have been struggling to figure out what the heck they did wrong in Texas. And it seems like all the Democrats across the country were focusing on asking the Democrats in Texas, what the heck did you guys do wrong? They really thought that they had all sorts of great candidates. They thought that they had tons of money. They certainly did have tons of money. They thought that they had the message, of course, of equality and equity and justice reform and all that good stuff that they talk about. But it certainly went all for naught. I mean, it really, really didn't help them at all. Texas Monthly has a very, very interesting January edition where they talk about the Bum Steers Award from last year. Which you know, who, what events or people, you know, deserved a Bum Steer Award because of how poorly they performed, and the number one Bum Steer award went to the Texas Democratic Party. Their messages, their tactics, just didn't seem to work, as well as what they were doing on a national level didn't work. I mean, really, really hurt them. I mean, you know, people would see what was going on in Portland and in Milwaukee with the Black Lives Matter and defund the police. They would also talk about, you know, the need for the wall on the border, and the Democrats wanted to tear it down and open it up. You know, everything, it seems like everything that they said, as far as their agenda went, just didn't play well in Texas. So it was, you know, then on top of that, they had, in my opinion, they had some very, very poor candidates.
Mm-hmm.
The lady that was running for Senate against Cornyn just never got traction.
Right.
Just didn't hold water. Wendy Davis, really, I mean, you know, she never said anything of interest. She hardly campaigned. I mean, their whole campaign was really poorly run, as well as their message was poor.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I think if there is, it's interesting to me because if you look, the Democrats in 2020 tried to do, in essence, what they did in 2018 with Beto and Ted Cruz, which is to spend tons of money and spend tons of money and spend tons of money hoping that all this money and the so-called demographics would get them the Senate seats. It didn't work in South Carolina with Lindsey Graham. It did not work here in Texas with John Cornyn. I mean, they spent a ton of money to defeat John Cornyn. Didn't work. It did work in Colorado and in Nevada, or Arizona. But I think, we weren't going to win those two, unfortunately. But anyway, and look at Georgia tonight. I mean, right now it's looking real good for Perdue. He's at over 51% with over 82%, 83%. I mean, he's starting to look very much like a winning candidate. And Loeffler, you know, not so much, but she is in the right direction. But the point I'm getting at is that they spend tons and tons of money in every one of these races, and nothing worked. And we talked about this before, George. I think it's their message. I don't think it's so much the lack of money or the fact that they're, you know, running.
Well, you know, what happened last night, you know, and again, I hold the media, the mainstream media, very responsible for the lack of coverage. But last night there was a protest in front of Senator Hawley's house. He is in Missouri, and his wife and newborn child are there in D.C. And there was a crowd of leftist Antifa people that showed up at their and actually knocked on the door and demanded to talk to him and wouldn't leave. I mean, you know, had whistles and drums and whatnot. That kind of tactic, that kind of behavior does not help the Democratic Party.
Not
it really doesn't.
No, not at all. No, you're exactly right.
And people see that.
What politician would be thrilled? I mean, I if they did that, I mean, George, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but if they did that to Nancy Pelosi's house, I would scream and say, don't do it. If they did that to any Democrat, I would say, I mean, look, you don't go to somebody's house and scare the wife with a new baby in this case. Or even if there was no new baby, you just don't do that. That's a line you don't cross. But, you know, that's the kind of stuff, George, I have to tell you, that's what they do in these, you know, that's what they did in Cuba. They would show up in front of your house and hold a rally and call you a member of the CIA. So these are left-wing tactics that I have personally seen with my own eyes. They did it to my parents. So,
well,
I mean,
you know,
it's
the
amazing.
Red Guard. It's the behavior of the Red Guard, you know, of communist China. It is outrageous. They did that. The Black Lives Matter people did that to city councilman here in San Antonio. They showed up at a city council meeting and demanded that everybody kneel because that was popular at that point. And so, of course, everybody knelt except for this one city councilman who bowed his head and, you know, and gave respect to whatever, you know, they were peddling. Well, because he didn't get on his knees, the next day they went to his house. Now, since there is an election, a city election that's happening, now Black Lives Matter is pretending to be a lamb and pretending to be open to everybody. And, you know, I mean, these people are lying Marxists.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you expose them, there is no way that they can hide. There's no way they can hide. And I think that within itself hurts their elections.
I think so. And I think that defunding the police message, and we talked about this, that I think killed them, absolutely killed them from coast to coast. It certainly killed them in South Texas. But one of the things that I'm hoping for, George, as we look at the elections in 2022 and what will be clearly, I think, a more friendly terrain for the Republicans, is that they look at what happened in South Texas, where you had significant support for Donald Trump among Hispanics. I mean, I think in many ways the Democrat Party in Texas must be scratching their heads saying, but I thought Hispanics were all going to vote for us because they hate Trump.
Yep.
Because that didn't happen.
That's right.
That didn't
That's
happen.
Right.
I mean, what happened was different. What happened was, yes, the majority of Hispanics did vote for Joe Biden, no question about that. But the reality is that the margin was smaller, and especially in South Texas. And I would argue, George, and then we'll take a break, I would argue, George, that defunding the police and the social issues like abortion and marriage, traditional marriage, that is, but especially abortion, I think abortion is finally starting to hurt Democrats with Hispanics, because we've gone, George, and I want to get your reaction to this, to what I'm about to say. We've gone from abortions rare and, you know, just very rare, legal, but very, very, very rare, to you can have an abortion in the last week of a pregnancy and it's a reproductive right. That's where we've gone.
Yep.
And I think that just kills them in the Hispanic community, George. I'll give you a chance to reply to that, and then we'll take a break.
No, I agree 100%. I mean, this situation where you had the governor of Virginia make the comment that, you know, that an abortion could even be performed if the child was born. You know, what are you saying? What
right.
are you saying? And I remember, you know, that turned off a lot of people. I mean,
absolutely.
I know a lot of folks here in South Texas who are pro-abortion and Democrat who had a very difficult time in trying to explain or defend that position.
Absolutely.
What
I mean, that is
mean?
It's an indefensible position. I mean, when you're sitting there, like if you say to me, and I don't agree with this, but what I'm saying is if the argument used to be, well, you know, a woman should have the right to an abortion, but it should be very rare and very rare circumstances. But now we've gone to the point where you're saying an abortion at any time of the pregnancy. And then I think to really turn off people, George, they're having celebrations after
yes.
they pass these laws. I mean, it's like, oh, my gosh, you know.
Morbid, absolutely morbid.
Absolutely. No, I think you're right. And I think in the case of Hispanics in particular, where motherhood in the Hispanic community is such an important matter, I think that this really killed them. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back with our friend George in just a minute. We'll talk a little bit about Senator Cruz and then get back to Georgia. This is Silvio Canto with our friend George Rodriguez in South Texas, talking a little bit about Texas and the Republican Party and the politics here in the next 2021 and 2022. There's obviously big election day coming up in 2022. By the way, George, getting back to this topic of 2022, I think that 2022 is going to be a very friendly terrain for Republicans, because it's going to be, assuming Joe Biden, it's going to be his first election, which usually hurts the incumbent. So I think that, you know, Republicans are going to do quite well here in Texas in 2022, George.
You know, I think that this was this was a foreshadowing of what is going to happen in the next 2 years in Texas, because I just don't think, you know, I am not sure how the Democrats, and this is, again, reading the articles that I've been reading back and forth regarding the postmortem of the Texas election. No one is sure how they can recover from this, because Texas is just not friendly to a socialist message. It just isn't.
Right. No, I think you're right.
It is just, you know, we are also, I mean, they are also shocked at the pro-border security message that Hispanic Texans have reacted to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that caught them completely off guard. They were thinking that because Donald Trump went down there and said he was going to build a wall and talked, had a strong anti-immigration, that somehow the Texans of Mexican descent were just going to flock to the Democratic Party or be appalled. But, you know, they forget that for generations now we've been competing against
right.
illegal aliens for jobs and resources. They forget that we have seen, you know, the problem of crime coming across the border, not to mention disease.
Right.
I'm not sure what message they can focus on other than just equality, because even the whole idea of an anti-religion, anti-church message is not going to play very well.
I'm not sure
what they can say. I mean, I'm not sure what can be done.
Yeah,
what,
no, I agree with you. I don't see I don't see any Democrat right now. And again, we're still a long time away. I realize that predictions are difficult, and you know, the next election for governor in Texas is not going to be. I mean, we still have 12, almost 20 months away. But if I had to tell you right now who would be a strong Democrat candidate for governor? People say, well, Beto O'Rourke or Julian Castro are the two perhaps most likely. Those are the two who think they're going to win or who probably will run. I think those would be very weak candidates in Texas.
Yep.
I don't think either one of those can win governorship in Texas. I really don't. And then I look around and I say, who else could it be? What member of the Texas state legislature, what Democrat in the state legislature in Austin can you say, okay, here's a candidate for governor who can win? I don't see one, George. Now, at the moment, I have not focused on anybody on the Republican side either. I'm assuming the lieutenant governor is going to run. I wouldn't be surprised if George P. Bush, you know, the nephew of number 43 and the grandson of number 41, I wouldn't be surprised if he runs. But
that's true. For example, Austin, the city of Austin and its politics are a terrible ad Democrats. I mean, they have done everything wrong with their liberal policies in Austin, which has fueled people to just criticize Austin beyond belief. Are they going to embrace these messages? I really don't know. I really, I cannot see how they can, absent some real big mistake by the Republican Party in total, as well as the candidates themselves, I'm not sure what they can do.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the Democrat Party here in Texas, and I'm going to argue in a lot of other states as well. We just don't know them as well as we know Texas. But I think the Democrat Party is in real trouble here in Texas in trying to put together, like you say, a message and trying to find someone who can deliver that message.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Across the state. Because, again, Beto O'Rourke had his moment that he was, as I like to say, a one-hit wonder. Julian Castro, I just don't think he's going to cut it. I think they're both too liberal for Texas, George. I think that's my point. Now, let me get your reaction quickly here before we run out of time to what Senator Cruz is doing. My sense is he's not going to succeed, but I think the country does need a conversation about what happened in 2020, because we're either going to get it now, George, or we're going to get it when Biden is president, because if this trend in Georgia continues, the Republicans are going to have the majority, and they will investigate 2020 with their majority in the Senate. So if I were Joe Biden, I'd be on television tonight saying, hey, let's have as much transparency as possible, and let's show the country that I was really elected after all. But they're not saying that.
Their attitude about the election is
George, it reminds me a little bit of my mom. You know, when I was a kid and I didn't want to eat vegetables, my mom would say, in Spanish, of course, shut your mouth and eat your vegetables. and that's kind of what these Democrats remind me of. They say, shut your mouth and don't ask any questions about the election. That may work to get Biden in the White House, but I don't think that's going to work.
Well, that's why he's going to have a very difficult time in governing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to – whoever we end up with, either Biden or Kamala, I am of the thinking that Kamala will take over eventually.
Yeah.
I just think that they're going to have a very difficult time governing because, they have exposed themselves for what they are. All of these Democrat mayors and governors that have been running, been telling everybody to stay home and don't fraternize, don't spread the virus. They themselves have been running around all over the place.
Right.
Absolute hypocrisy. So they've hurt themselves. They hurt themselves consistently, and all we have to do is just look at the situation with how Nancy Pelosi has continually lost over the past two elections, has lost more and more seats for the Democrats in the House. I think that it's going to continue. It's a trend that's going to continue, and it's going to hurt them in the White House.
Yes, absolutely. So I do commend Senator Cruz for having the courage to stand up and say, hey, look, guys, we had a problem in 2020, and we need to audit these results. And frankly, if I was a Democrat, George, that's what I would be saying too, because as you just indicated, you're going to have – it's starting to look more and more and more like the Republicans are going to have the majority in the Senate, either 51-49 or 52-48. That's what it's looking more and more. We'll get to that topic in a minute. And I'm just simply saying it's going to be miserable for Joe Biden. Because 2020, there are going to be Senate hearings with Lindsey Graham, I guarantee you, talking about the election, and it's not going to be pretty for. So I hope that some Democrats tomorrow, George, in Washington, look at what Senator Cruz is saying and Jim Jordan and Mo Brooks of Alabama and say, guys, maybe we need to have an audit, because at least if we have an audit and we win, we're not going to have this cloud over our heads. So I congratulate Senator Cruz. Let's quickly get back to Georgia, George. I like that. So they named it after you, right, George? They named the state after you. That's what it was. Right now, 87% of the vote. Maybe you're looking at the same thing I'm looking at. 87% of the vote, and Perdue has a majority of about 115,000 votes. I think they're going to be calling this pretty soon.
They are not going to catch him. Nope.
No, I just don't see how. Now, unless they got some box of mailed-in ballots where he can pick up 115,000,
which could
happen. They can do this. It's happened, but I think it's unlikely. Perdue has a lead right now of 3 points. It's 51.5 versus 48.5. So they would have to they're going to have to be very creative to win this one. Now, on the other side, Loeffler has a lead of about a point and a half, maybe almost 2 points. And she's up by about 60, 70,000 votes. So, as I said before, I think they're both going to win unless there's some men.
She might take it with that lead.
Well, again, we don't know, as you indicated, but 87% of the vote is in.
Yeah.
So 13% of the vote is out. So, Ossoff would have to be, he would have to get about, you know, whatever is out there, he would have to win it by 120,000 votes just to catch up. And
right.
Warnock would have to win it by 60,000. Now, that's more doable, perhaps, Warnock, but I think it's unlikely. So I think they're both going to win, but obviously we're probably not going to know. But although I do believe with 87% of the vote and a three-point margin, I wouldn't be surprised if they call Purdue tonight, George.
Yeah, I did too. I did too. I'm feeling very good and optimistic about that.
Yeah, well, I am too, and I really think it's a major, major advancement tonight, because about a couple of hours ago, it did look a little depressing, George.
Yeah, it did. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, when they had that 55-45 lead, and I'm saying, where are those votes coming from? Well, I think we know now. And I look at the map, George, one last thing. I'm looking at a map of Georgia, and there are still some white counties, meaning that those are counties that have not reported. And most of them are rural areas, so
yeah, right.
That
right.
should add a little bit. Anyway, well, George, as always, thank you for your time. We'll know more about Georgia probably overnight or tomorrow, but thank you for your time and your input. I'll ask you one last question. Who do you think, I know this is a prediction so far ahead, but just a gut feeling today, almost 2 years before, who do you think is going to be the Republican nominee for governor? I'm going to say George P. Bush, or at least one of the ones running. What is your gut feeling?
Well, I'm definitely going to say that the lieutenant governor, Dan Patrick, will be running. I think that he'll definitely have his hat in there. I think that you're already seeing the two camps splitting here in San Antonio, definitely because of the Alamo issue. There has been a lot of criticism of George P. Bush for his lack of support and his work with the Castros on the issue of the reimagining the Alamo. I think definitely it's going to be between the two of them. You know,
it'll be a tough primary.
A third person.
Is there a third person you can think of?
No, I don't think there is. I can't think of one.
I was thinking Ken Paxton, but he's got too many problems.
Yeah. Yeah, I
now,
can't
what
think
about,
of a third
what
person.
About a member of Congress, George, who could
yeah, that's
run
a
for
possibility.
Governor?
But, my observation is that quite often somebody that's in Congress has a cushy job, a cushy political job,
yeah.
and will not jump off unless they're being pushed out. And
right.
The only person that I can think of that would jump on that is Julian Castro, who doesn't have anything to do right now.
Right. Well, he's the one that I was thinking about too. You know that
yeah.
that would be the most likely Democrat.
But you know, one of the things that one of the surveys that came out at the end of the year regarding end of the year facts here in San Antonio was that the Castros are the least respected. Get that, the least respected politicians in San Antonio.
That's interesting.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, I mean, I can believe it, but you know, I live up here, and I'm not down there where they're obviously very powerful. But I don't think Julian Castro looked that good in the campaign. So that's why I don't think he helped himself a great deal. And I think Wendy Davis is pretty much done. I think that's gone.
Now,
but anyway, it should be interesting.
It would be between Bush and Patrick. But on the Democrat, who knows? Who knows who they're going to come up with?
That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Well, George, thank you for your time. Let's hope that these numbers in Georgia hold up. They're looking good, but, you know, that
you
last
it,
yard is, as you know, the last yard is always the longest.
Oh, gosh.
Yes. George, thank you very much, and good night, and we'll talk again. Thank you very much for joining us tonight, as always.
Thank you. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. George Rodriguez, our friend in San Antonio. And, again, 87% of the vote in. Both Republicans are leading, but, you know, you never know. You never know. We certainly hope that these numbers stick. Or at least the trend continues. The margin right now is about 100,000 for Purdue. There must be some Democrat counties reporting right now because he's lost a little bit of that lead. And about 80,000 for Loeffler. So, again, 87% of the vote. They're going to have to come up with a lot of votes, I think, to close a lead like that. So I'm going to stick to my prediction that Perdue and Loeffler are reelected tonight. And I think it's good for the country. I think it's better for the country to have a Republican Senate. No doubt in my mind that having a Republican Senate is much better for the country than having a 50-50 Senate with Kamala Harris breaking ties. I just don't think that would work well. Thank you for listening. We'll probably look more at these Georgia elections tomorrow. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.